I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. Today in the USA, it's Memorial Day, honouring those who died serving their country, even if most did not fall defending their homeland, but in wars waged for oil, power and the profit margins of military contractors and foreign lobbies, chief among them Israel. Today, we'll see continued Trump complicity in the NATO nation armed genocide in Gaza. That's even as Washington's most obedient allies, Netanyahu's co-belligerents, Britain, France and Canada, are grumbling about the Holocaust they actively participate in. Joining me now from San Francisco is Alison Weir, founder and executive director of If Americans Knew, a non-profit organization exposing how the U.S. media and foreign policy establishment systematically erase Palestinian suffering and distort the reality of Israel's war crimes. Alison, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. I better start in a week where we've seen more carnage and, who knows, a Israeli attack on Iran, information about which was leaked earlier in the week from the Trump administration. I better start by saying, what is If Americans Knew? And I suppose more disturbingly, why don't they know?
Well, they don't know largely because the media is so poor, has covered Israel-Palestine so poorly for decades. It's getting slightly better now among some sectors, but still very poor overall and very bad among the conservative media most often. If Americans Knew, I started a number of years ago after visiting the West Bank and Gaza as a freelance journalist during the Second Intifada and traveled around with my notebook and my camera and saw for the first time what was going on. I had had no idea about that. Very late in my life to discover that. So I started this nonprofit to be journalistic, nonpartisan. We're not Democrats or Republicans. It's just a journalistic factual information to the general public about the facts that are going on in Palestine, about the complicity of the U.S. government in what's going on, about the long history of the conflict that most people know nothing about, and about our connection to it as Americans. Most of us who are not Jewish feel it's just a distant, confusing conflict that has nothing to do with us. So we started telling people that the U.S. gives massive amounts of money to Israel, which most Americans did not know and still don't know, and therefore think it's just one of many sad conflicts around the world when and if they hear about it.
And so,
that's been our general approach.
Yeah, actually, I was in Dubai for the Second Intifada and the killing of Mohammed al-Dura, which in comparison to now, I mean, it's exponentially much worse. I think you hinted there that things have got slightly better in terms of If Americans Knew, the website that you run, in terms of information. How do you characterize how lockstep the so-called mainstream media is that for 2 years they haven't been covering the genocide, and then suddenly, as if by magic, some of the presenters on even mainstream news, I mean, even on Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, suddenly seem to understand some element of your information on If Americans Knew? Why does everything happen lockstep?
It's interesting how much that is, that you hear the same phrases, the same usually Israeli talking points when and if you hear anything about the issue. But now it is changing slightly. I'm not sure the exact cause of why there's this sudden change, unless it's just that it's so horrific. It's so horrific. Because of social media, many more Americans, especially younger Americans, are learning what's going on, and it's showing the corporate media up for the fraudulence of so many of its news reports. I think that's part of it. I think they may be realizing that this is, I truly think this is dwarfing the Nazi Holocaust, what's going on right now. It's certainly a massive genocide that's going on in real time that we can see, unlike the 1940s when people didn't see what was going on. Now we can see it. You can open up your smartphone that everyone has. You go to Twitter or Instagram, and you can see these tragic, horrible images from the region if you know to look for them. And people are doing that more and more. And so the corporate media must realize that they are really being shown up as fraudulent, pro-Israel shills. And as human beings, I'm wondering, I'm hoping that maybe this is touching them also. And they certainly don't want to be on the side of history where their children and grandchildren said, how could you do that? How could you do that? How could you not tell the truth about what was being done to Palestinian babies children, old people, young people, day after day, week after week, month after month. Now we're almost 2 years. And this, of course, is after decades of oppression of Palestinians. Decades and decades of it. And some people are starting to learn about that also. So the media are changing a bit. Whether they'll change enough, I don't know. I don't know what will happen with Iran. But it's, I think it, one of the things that maybe shocked me the most was PBS, Public Broadcasting System. Most Americans consider that very liberal, very progressive, very trustworthy. And yet, what they did several years ago to me was shocking. I noticed it at the time. During the Great March of Return, which I'm sure your viewers know about, almost no Americans know about that. Even now, when they're paying attention to Gaza, they don't know that in 2018 through 2019, thousands of Gazans, men, women, and children, were gathering to use Gandhian nonviolent protests week after week after week, 86 weeks in a row, almost 2 years. And every week, they were being shot, some killed, many maimed. Women, children, old people, medics, journalists, this went on. And on and on. And Americans don't even know about it. You know, many people say, well, what Hamas did on October 7th was wrong. They don't know. For 2 years, Palestinians had tried massive nonviolence after years of smaller nonviolence. PBS, in some ways, is the worst because they actually co-produced with the BBC a documentary about the Great March of Return. It was flawed, but it had very strong footage of Palestinians of all ages being shot. It was scheduled to be shown on our local PBS station, the one that many of us watch. I watched the one in San Francisco. Those of us that were following it were very excited that this was finally going to be shown to the American public. At the last minute, it was canceled. I and other people phoned PBS, phoned KQED, asking what was going on. They said, oh, it's just been postponed for breaking news. It was not breaking news at all, but they said it was postponed. After a while, they admitted they would never show it, never would show that. So here, people in England, bad as BBC may be, BBC did show that. People in England saw that documentary, even though Frontline PBS program had co-produced it, had scheduled it. It was never shown to Americans. I've just written an article, and it struck me that if Americans knew, if Americans had seen that documentary, seen that footage, had been told that it's our tax money that is paying for those bullets that are hitting children in the head, that are causing massive amputations, that are causing misery, if they had seen that, I like to think that so many of us would have demanded that we stop supporting Israel, we stop supplying it with billions of our dollars, that that might have brought change and October 7th wouldn't have ever happened. But it wasn't shown to Americans, and PBS has a lot to, I think, a lot to account for.
Yeah, I understand that the BBC then had to apologize because it may have linked to Hamas, and I suppose, yeah, so they are in a sense recruiting for Hamas, and Israel is perhaps the greatest recruitment sergeant for Hamas, is the implication. Interesting, you used the parallel of the Holocaust. Most Israelis, according to polls, show they support the genocide, but those brave enough not to. Some were demonstrating this week, and people said, well, they should be, it's like Germans during the Holocaust should have tried to stop the trains going to Auschwitz rather than just demonstrating. I mean, you found it if Americans knew, and for your troubles, you got a visit from the FBI. Tucker Carlson is one of the few commentators on so-called mainstream, well, people watch him, who talk about the genocide. How dangerous is it for, be it you or be it Tucker Carlson, to talk the way you do about what's happening in Gaza? Why were the FBI talking to you?
It's hard to know what will happen with that. I mean, certainly until now, I've occasionally gotten a death threat. It's been smeared. You know, I'm called whatever nasty word, and in addition to, of course, being called anti-Semitic.
This is the James Comey FBI, Cash Patel FBI.
That's right. Exactly. This was under the Biden administration. I was astonished. You know, they showed up at my door, and unannounced, they could easily have phoned me or, you know, tried to reach me or whatever. But suddenly, two FBI agents showed up and said they wanted to ask me a few questions. My son lives just across the way, so I said, I'm going to get my son. I wanted to witness. He came out shocked that there were FBI agents there. But I immediately told them, you know, and I've nothing to hide. Everything, I want to be public. I really did the opposite of hiding. And yet, the way things are, my now understanding of what's going on, I told them I would not answer any questions. But I asked them why they were here at my home. And at that point, they said, and I had my phone out, our wonderful phones that I could videotape the whole thing the whole time, which I did. And when I said that, they were very friendly and smiley, and they said, oh, then we'll leave. And they left. I don't know if there'll be another visit that's less friendly or if I'm safe for now. But there are, truthfully, I don't want to be overly dramatic. I'm not suffering anything at all compared to what other people are, especially in the region. But there is a danger connected to what I'm doing. Certainly, there's a danger to people's livelihoods, to their reputation, by connection to their families, to their extended families. I have many grandchildren. So you do pay a bit of a cost. It's something we're duty-bound to do. And I'm proud to have been doing this for over 20 years. But there is a cost and makes it very difficult for many Americans to be as public and to speak out the way I feel they should.
Well, Palestinians say you'd be on the right side of history, but especially as a journalist, you know about the number of mysterious deaths of journalists in the United States who cover stories and try to alert the American people to stories that are not in the interest of the so-called deep state, whether it be Michael Hastings, Gary Webb. The roll call, there's an immense roll call. I mean, how frightening was this?
Well, there have certainly been, Gary Webb's a very good example of a just tragic loss, whatever happened there. But I think that I'm not worried about my physical safety. Perhaps I should be, but, people do say I should be, but I'm not. It's more the reputational cost that I feel goes on and silences people. I think I was talking to somebody saying, why don't more people speak out, once they know? Why don't they do more and say more? And he says, the answer was, there's no cost in the U.S., whereas when you speak about Palestine, there is a cost. There's a good chance you'll lose your job, not be promoted, be smeared as an anti-Semite, or called a white supremacist if you happen to be white, or called a racist if you happen to be black. So there's really, look at what's happening with students here. Some are not getting their diplomas, they're being suspended, some people are being deported. So there's a cost when you speak out, but
Alison
of course there's a larger gain.
Alison Weir, I'll stop you there. More from the founder and executive director of If Americans Knew after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and executive director of If Americans Knew, Alison Weir. Alison, we were talking about the dangers to those in the United States, albeit with the First Amendment of the Constitution still in operation, for them even talking about the genocide. Here in the Middle East, we have headlines like UNICEF, Gaza, deadliest place in the world for children. On the front page of your website, If Americans Knew, you display the figure of $63 million a day of U.S. money to pay for this Holocaust. We can all see the social media feeds, as you said. I mean, Americans in general, as they suffer the decaying infrastructure of years of lack of investment, you think they're going to begin to demand their money back from Netanyahu? And are they starting to realize it doesn't matter whether you're left or right, particularly perhaps those on the right, on the Make America Great Again right, realizing that their money is going to fund the Holocaust?
I think people are starting to wake up to that, and that might be one of the reasons that the media are want to quick sort of control the discourse. You know, if you cover it to a degree, you can choose which things you cover and which things you leave out. And of course, they often leave out the American connection to it. More Americans are beginning to realize that. We've certainly for many years pushed that because Americans are very busy often. They're working two jobs maybe to have enough money for their children. So they're very busy, but they're starting to pay attention. And when they realize how much of their tax money that they have worked so hard for is going to a foreign country that's quite well off, that's in many ways better off than Americans. And worse than that, it's being used to cause this oppression and misery of children being killed and starving to death, intentionally being starved. There's enormous outrage that's brewing. And the Anti-Defamation League, as they call themselves, we often call them the Defamation League. This is the group that claims to find anti-Semitism under every, you know, bush. In reality, what they are starting to find
they
is
made a whole document about you.
To what is
I'm being told.
That's right. That's right.
So I guess you can be proud of that. Accusing you of what? The usual slurs.
The usual slurs, taking things out of context completely. You know, I wrote a letter to them, you know, asking them to correct it. I don't mind being, I don't mind. In fact, I'm very happy if people repeat what I actually wrote and said. But of course, that's not what they do. Instead, they misrepresent people and then claim they're anti-Semitic based on their misrepresentations. So the ADO is misrepresenting more and more people as supposedly anti-Semitic. You know, the growth of anti-Semitism usually means it's more people waking up to what Israel is doing. And the fact that groups like the ADL, Jewish Relations Councils, Jewish Federations, AIPAC, are all supporting it. Astonishingly, they're supporting this very visible, very blatant, very grotesque genocide. And people are seeing that and realizing that they're the Israel lobby is very powerful here, and that our Congress people are always being paid by the Israel lobby, or they're afraid that the money will go to their opponent. And so they vote massive amounts of money. In the midst of this, you know, the Biden administration, with the awareness and complicity of Congress, sent them more money than ever before. Even though there'd been massive amounts before that, they sent far more than before in the middle of mass murder, whether or not you want to call it genocide, which is the accurate term, I feel, there's no doubt it was mass slaughter of women and children. Mass slaughter. In the middle of that, they sent our weapons and our money. And more people are learning about that and becoming appropriately outraged at what's going on.
I'll get to Trump in a second. I'll get to Trump in a second. But what did it make you feel when you heard, slowly we now hear that not only was Genocide Joe terminally ill, he's demented. The media in a cover-up, as far as we understand it, trying to get him re-elected. But Israeli politicians saying at no point since 2022 did the Blinken, Sullivan, Biden, Harris, all those people that hopefully we'll have forgotten about soon, no point did they tell them to stop shooting the children. No point did they tell them to the ceasefire. What did it make you feel when you heard what you presumably suspected anyway?
That's right. I did suspect it. But, you know, to see that confirmation was appalling. You know, clearly what was going on, as I'm sort of we're both talking about, is that the base, many young people, many of the people that get out and support the Democrats and ring doorbells and pass out flyers, we're learning what was going on. So Biden would try to, at least Biden and his handlers, whoever was really behind him, would try to say, oh, we're telling them to stop. We're calling for a ceasefire. Of course, it never happened. And their actions speak louder than words. And while they were saying that, they were sending weapons and money. But they kept saying that. Of course, now we've learned that even that was a lie. Even that was a lie. Weak as it was, they covered that up also. And now that's come out. So the good thing about all this, there's very little good about it, is that more people are learning the facts, more people are waking up. I was at a small vigil in nearby here where I live the other day. I'm holding signs, stop the ceasefire, stop the genocide. And the cars that drove past, a large number of them were honking in approval, waving and approving of us. Before, a number of years ago, when I'd been part of something like that in the same area, we had many people very angry at what we were doing because they were misinformed. But now, in progressive areas of the country, people are pro-Palestine and against what Israel's doing. The ones that know, still many. There are many more, and they're not being politically active. We don't give, you know, most of us are not billionaires. We're up against billionaires, many billionaires, we have it on our website, that support Israel. I remember reading a very eye-opening book a number of years ago called Jewish Power by J.J. Goldberg, a very distinguished Jewish journalist for The Forward, wrote a book about Jewish power, very proud of this, you know, considerable accomplishments, and mentioned at that time that half the billionaires in the United States are Jewish, out of a population that's about 2-4% of the country. So what happens, that number may be lower now or may be higher, I don't know. But I think what we find is the billionaires in the United States, many of them do support Israel, sadly, and use their money in support of Israel. The other half of the billionaires, for the most part, really don't care one way or the other, have no connection to it, feel no connection to it. So even though they have massive amounts of money that could be mobilized on behalf of human rights and what I feel are should be American principles, it's not mobilized. So when we're talking about wealth, we have the wealth of the country, you know, a substantial portion of it being used on behalf of Israel, and the other wealth not being mobilized at all.
That's the infamous anti-Semitic trope. That's the one that's always used. In fairness to one billionaire, Elon Musk, and by the way, we invite dead-eyed Blinken, who I think by his stepfather is linked to Jeffrey Epstein. We invite him on the show. He seems to have disappeared. But one billionaire, Elon Musk, his dad was on the show actually the other week, has allowed us to see what's happening in Gaza on our social feeds, because he stopped the censorship to a degree so that we can see it. But I suppose we better get on to, Elon Musk's Elon Musk's boss. Sorry,
I just quickly want to point out, because I do want to point out, you know, many of the people at this vigil were Jewish. You know, many Jewish Americans, fortunately, are in full support of Palestinian rights and are speaking out. So that's definitely grown much more from the way it had been previously. So certainly the people supporting Palestine are a very diverse group, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, you know, secular, religious, African-American,
Americans have an unfavorable opinion of Israel right now, according to the latest polling. Well, we better go to Musk's boss, Trump, of course. Some people are calling him Death Camp Donald. How powerful is Miriam Adelson over Donald Trump? Because he doesn't need that money, in a sense. He's on a final term, we presume. He doesn't need to please AIPAC. AIPAC gave $14 million to Trump to buy him off. I think it's $167,000 to J.D. Vance. I'm using AIPAC tracker figures. $1 million to Marco Rubio, this neocon Secretary of State, who seems to have quietened down a bit. $46,500 to Tulsi Gabbard, the Director of National Intelligence. What is the power of Miriam Adelson and AIPAC over this cabinet? And is it, in fact, less? The first time they haven't had as much power over over a White House in living memory.
It's been puzzling to me. Truthfully, I thought that many of us felt that Trump, you know, being in his second term and therefore not needing to get lobby money anymore, that, you know, he could actually take the correct stance. He had hinted in the past, he had made statements that were actually very promising before 2016. He had spoken out that more about the U.S. should be neutral, that the wars in the Middle East were devastating to the United States. So truthfully, looking at the Israeli media in particular, Israel was much more in favor of Hillary Clinton than Trump, because of those different statements and because of the position. So when Trump came into office the first time, again, it looked a little bit hopeful compared to Hillary, who had a long track record of causing bloodshed. And in fact, he did repulse the neocons for a number of months. He did not appoint what they call an anti-Semitism envoy the way he was supposed to. He avoided doing that. So he came under huge attack by Israel partisans and by progressives of other people, I think partly pushed by Israel partisans. So he came under, he had repulsed the neocons who wanted to be part of his administration, but he was not welcoming them. He actually named some fairly good people to his cabinet. But after several months, he caved. It was very obviously he caved to them. He started accepting the neocons. He started taking policies that they would like, and that was the end of it. So we were hoping that this time around, without the need to run again, that maybe he would take reasonable policies, especially he was perceived by many of his voters as the anti-war candidate. That was the way he was positioning himself. That's what people saw and hoped for and expected. Unfortunately, it's not what we've gotten, but that was the expectation. So it's unclear to me why that happened. You know, certainly he got, I believe it was at least $100 million from Miriam Adelson and lots of money from other wealthy people. But why would that matter to him at that point? You know, it's really unclear why his positions were so bad.
It's a mystery. Some people saying, you know, maybe they have something on him. I better just finally ask whether you're going to retire sometime soon, because actually, the only benefit from the Holocaust, from this genocide, has been the mask is off. We know the mass killing of U.S. imperialism since Korea, Vietnam, onwards, Latin America, Afghanistan, all of that, is that it could be the end of Israel itself. Ehud Olmert saying they're at civil war. And as we said, people in the United States, they have an unfavorable opinion of Israel. Thinking of retiring if Americans knew soon when the American people wake up?
I think there'll be plenty of things we still need to work on, but I actually had been thinking, you know, I'm have advanced years and I have grandchildren, and I was actually thinking of retiring before now. But then they started the genocide, and you can't retire in the middle of that. So we'll retire when and if we can, but until then we'll keep fighting to give Americans the facts. They don't know the history of it. I have a book that I think really reveals a lot about who spoke out against Zionism in the 1940s. The State Department opposed it. The intelligence agents opposed it. The military, the Pentagon was opposing Zionism. I have a lot of quotes in my book.
Allison Weir.
My book has sold over 50,000 copies.
Allison Weir, we're out of time. Allison Weir, thank you.
Thank you very much. And here's the book.
Against Our Better Judgment, and the website If Americans Knew. That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch, follow all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.